A lie's true power cannot be accurately measured by the number of people who believe its deception when it is told. It must be measured by the number of people who will go out after hearing it, trying to convince others of its truth. And this week's opening quote comes from Dennis Sharp. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, certainly we do live in a world of lies today, ladies and gentlemen, we do. And most of these lies are perpetuated and do continue simply because people share them so openly and simply believe what they are told. And very often you'll find that this is almost a default action. It's just the way people have been trained to operate. And very often they're not even aware that they're doing it. And you can notice this by simply listening to any workplace conversation. You find that most people, the conversations that they have, they're usually talking about what they saw on the television or what they read in the newspapers or gossiping about what their friends are up to or whatever. But if it's something to do with the world or something to do with life, it's based on what the television told them or what they read in the newspapers. But you'll find that most people's conversation, their everyday conversation, is about a television show that they watched the night before. Or perhaps in these days not so much a television show, perhaps something that they saw on Instagram or something that they saw on Netflix. Whatever it is that's trending at the time. And even taking it further and looking at it from a philosophical perspective, you know, people will often argue their concept of reality with others based not on their own personal experience, but based on stuff they've read, based on stuff they've been told, based on ideas that have been put into their head through textbooks or studies that have been conducted by other people, but not anything that they have experienced in real life. They might be pushing a point that they got from a self-help book, but getting help from a self-help book is not self-help, it's help. It's adopting someone else's perspective. But yet they will continue to argue the point. They will continue to believe that they are right, having never really experienced that which they are arguing about firsthand for themselves, and from their own perspective, and viewed something and judged it according to their own ideas of what it was, without some type of outside influence. A great example of this is the education and political systems. People just believe whatever the teachers at the school tell them, because the teachers believe whatever is written in the textbooks. And when the government brings information to people, people simply believe it because it's the result of a government study. And, of course, this isn't a messy independent study. This is a government study. Simply the process of adding the word government to the phrase, instead of making it a normal study, making it a government study, seems to add this air of security to people, and they simply believe what they're told, and they believe it must be accurate because it was done by the government, and the government would have made sure that there was no inaccuracies in there because, of course, it's the government, and the government is just so trustworthy and so responsible. In fact, I've actually had people use that as a form of evidence when they've been debating a fact. If you show them some evidence, they'll say, oh, but hang on, this is from a government study. And if you try to debate them, they'll say, yes, but that doesn't matter because this is a government study. And that's really all they need to make their mind up. But really, when you look at government, folks, government has a track record of telling barefaced lies. In fact, that's all government ever really does. So why anyone would believe a government study is really beyond me. The government does the opposite of everything that it says it's doing. It just disguises it so it looks like it's doing the right thing when really it's doing the wrong things. It's just the way governments work. The only reason the government would even do a study on anything is because a point is being debated, or perhaps the truth is getting out to people and they want people to believe a certain thing, so they will launch a government study simply to control the narrative. And therefore all debate will be squashed and you must believe what the government says, and any debate past that point is irrelevant because the government already said this is the way it is. And it's very obvious, folks. I mean, this is how they've managed to control the vaccine debate. It's how they've managed to control the fluoride debate. It's how they've managed to control the Holocaust debate. It's even how they've managed to control the chemtrail debate. They simply say this is, and anybody who says anything else is spreading fake news and may be penalized and may even be subject to arrest the way the laws are going. And that's the way it goes, folks. But as I said, you've got to look at government, and their entire track record is one of barefaced lies. And what you really see if you step back and look at things is that they do the opposite of everything that they say they're doing. A great example of this is the current process that is happening in China, the moving of all of the people from the country into the ghost cities that have been built in China. Remember, I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned the ghost cities. Anyone who's unfamiliar with that, just look up the term ghost cities, just search it on the internet, and you'll find that there's been dozens of cities built across China which are all standing there unoccupied. And you've got to wonder what these cities are for. Well, what they're doing now is they're pulling all the farmers out of the farming regions and out of the more rural regions of the country, and they're bringing them to live in all of these cities. And this is being done by the government. It's been done under the guise of a humanitarian project. They now have an initiative they've launched in China that they claim will end all poverty by the year 2020. That's what they're doing. They're finding people in poor districts and poor regions, and they are tailoring a program for these families specifically to lift them out of poverty, is what they're saying. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? A process which will leave no poor people, no poverty anywhere in China. How delightful for everybody. What they're actually doing is making sure everyone is working, everyone has a job, everyone is in a city, and therefore everyone is subject to the new Chinese surveillance system. They say they want to raise people up out of poverty in China and have the whole process done by 2020. And coincidentally, what they also say is they want to have a complete surveillance state with no dark corners anywhere in China where anybody can hide, where everyone is monitored in every aspect of their lives, and everyone is subject to the new Chinese social credit system by 2020. Same thing. And here we see them doing it under the guise of a massive humanitarian project to end poverty. So you can see how they disguise things and where it's really leading. And all governments do this, folks, and make no mistake about it, this is what Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 is about as well. It isn't just about preserving rural regions and preserving and protecting nature. It's getting everybody into a situation where they can be confined into a concentrated population zone and kept under 24-hour-a-day surveillance in every single aspect of their lives. And like I said, it all sounds very wonderful, lifting people up out of poverty and making sure everyone has a job. But what if you don't want a job? What if you're a farmer? What if your job is looking after your animals, looking after your crops, and looking after your family and caring for your house? What if you're an artist? What if you're someone who simply likes living in the country and doesn't want to live in a city and doesn't want to do some government-designated job and take home some government-designated wage and walk between the government-designated lines? What if you want to be someone who lives in your traditional house where your family grew up and you would like your children to be living in the country and experiencing that type of life? Well, under the new system, you simply won't be allowed to. You have to come and live in the city. And if you go and do other things, well, then you'll lose social crediting points. You'll lose purchasing power. You'll be squeezed out of the system and you'll become an undesirable and you'll end up in the smart prison. And people will accept that and see that that is okay for that to happen to you, because why would you not be complying with what the government wants you to do? You must be an untrustworthy person. And we're seeing this now in China because many of the people who are being scooped up out of these rural areas and taken to the cities have lived in the country their whole lives. They've grown up as farmers and they simply don't want to live in the city. And so once they're put there, they go, well, what are we doing here? And they pack up and they go back to where they came from, only to find that their house has been destroyed, their land has been razed, it's all been reclaimed by the government, and the life that they had simply doesn't exist anymore because their traditional lands are no longer there, and they don't have any choice but to go and work at some job that they've never done before, that they hate doing, in a city because it's now the only home that they have. And again, all of this being done under the guise of a humanitarian effort to lift people out of poverty. But really, it's not about any of that. It's about surveillance and it's about control. And when you look at the Chinese system, I mean, the people, Rothschilds, Rockefellers, all of the bankers, the banking cartels that have been running the world for so long, are heavily involved in the Chinese system. They love the Chinese work ethic and they would love to see it brought out into all of our countries as well. And it's happening, folks. It's just being done in a more gradual way. I mean, it's a lot easier to get away with in China because the Chinese people are so compliant. But in the West, it needs to be done in a different way. And they're doing it through the surveillance devices that we're all buying ourselves, the Alexas that people are having in their home, the new Google Home device that people are buying, the surveillance apps on their phones, just their phones themselves, the way their phones are taking over their lives, and the way these devices are now being used in court cases as well. You know, your data from your Alexa can be brought in and used to testify against you in a court of law. The data that was recorded on your refrigerator or your clock radio or whatever. The whole surveillance system is being brought online in Western countries as well, the same as the Chinese system. It's just being done in a different way. Chinese will simply roll over on command, but the people in the West need to be tricked into it, and the main way they're going to do that is through fear. You know, once you do have these devices in your home, and once you do realize you're being surveilled and everything you say and do, then you start policing your own thoughts, and society starts policing itself and leading itself into the smart grid, where it gradually becomes compliant simply because it's scared to do anything other than be compliant. Now, I think things will be coming to pretty much of a head in the West pretty soon. I think we're going to see some major events pretty soon. Of course, the QAnon event should be happening in next month. We're coming very close to November. People have been sitting back for the last 8 or 9 months waiting for this big event that's going to happen in November. Just coincidentally, of course, we've had Trump just say that it will be difficult to unite the country without a major event. Sounds very reminiscent of the PNAC document for some reason. Not that there will be a false flag. There may be a false flag. There may be something else. There may be a financial crash. Maybe there will be mass arrests. Something to complement the QAnon operation. Because, of course, everyone's been hearing about this for months on end now, and there is a whole movement who's been completely ignoring the smart prison being rolled out and just eating popcorn and sitting back and watching the Q narrative for the last 8 months. All these sealed indictments are going to lead to mass arrests, and the whole world's going to change, and Trump's going to emerge as the savior of mankind on the white horse, come charging out in his shining armor and bring the whole world to safety. I really don't think this is going to happen. I really think Trump is a player the same as everybody else. But still, there is a lot of people waiting for this big event that is about to happen in November. And really, I mean, what they could get away with this, folks, I mean, they would probably be able to introduce martial law, and large sections of the so-called truth community would be fine with that. They would think it was all part of the plan. Trust the plan. It's okay to have martial law on the streets. It's so that Trump can arrest Hillary Clinton. We need to have martial law on the streets just so he can take out the pedophile banksters. How this works out in any logical form, I don't really know. But there's a lot of people that I think would probably accept martial law at this stage simply because they would think it was about the removal of the deep state. They don't realize that the deep state is the state. The deep state is there because the state is there. The deep state is what happens when the state closes the doors and the television cameras are turned off. It's all the one mechanism, ladies and gentlemen, the same as the world governments are all one mechanism and all one organism as well. All of this theater of conflict and all of these nations facing off against each other, it's all theater for the masses, ladies and gentlemen. The whole thing is a charade. It's one big puppet show. They all work together and they all form one criminal cabal that is working for a common goal. And that common goal seems to be the further destruction of any trace of our real history and the shifting of the entire human race into this digital dystopia that's been created around us. Because that's where it's all leading. And of course, something else that seems to be looming very real on the horizon is depopulation, or an event that is going to lead to depopulation. Perhaps another reset, if that's what you want to call it. And that's something that I'll try to remember to get back to a little bit later. But the destruction of our past and destruction of our history and the destruction of knowledge is a really, really huge part of what's happening. Now, all of the conflicts in Syria, all of the conflicts in the Middle East, the whole conflict in Syria has been mainly about destroying the infrastructure, destroying all the ancient monuments, all the ancient temples, any trace of what we had in the past. And so much of the way it's been played has been a distraction. It's been theatre just to keep us looking in the wrong direction. The whole spectre of Israel, the way it's been constructed to be this struggling, fledgling democracy, desperately fighting off terrorists all around it. Well, we know it isn't. We know it's exactly the opposite of that. It's actually there creating all the terrorism. And this is all being exposed, and Israel is set to fail. Of course it's set to fail, because it was set up to fail. Even Henry Kissinger has recently said in 10 years there will no longer be a state of Israel. And everyone's been thinking, oh no, it's all about the Greater Israel Project. And sure, the Greater Israel Project is a reality, but really, when you look at the inordinate amount of influence the Israeli system has, and really, if you want to look at these people, there'll be debate that, oh, look, you must refer to them as Zionists and not Jews, because it's not all Jews, and I can admit that. I mean, that's the way it is. But really, what we're talking about is Bolsheviks. These people are Bolsheviks. And if you go and look at the history of Bolshevism, that's who the people who control Israel are. And what happened in the Bolshevik Revolution was absolutely horrendous, and it was not the result of Zionism, it was the result of Judaism, because Bolshevism is rooted in not Zionism, but Judaism, as is communism rooted in Judaism. And if you look at that, and you look at the inordinate amount of influence that these people have all around the world already, you begin to see that Greater Israel doesn't matter, because the world is Greater Israel, and it already is. They're just solidifying the plan. And all of this stuff has been a distraction, because it's all been about this smart grid. It's all been about this digital system that is coming online, the social crediting system, the surveillance state. This is what it's always been about. And in such a state, it doesn't matter who controls what countries. It doesn't matter which country is what. It doesn't matter what people you belong to. It doesn't matter what nation you belong to. It doesn't matter what nationality or race or religion or creed or culture you are. Because it's all going to be contained within the one surveillance system. That's what it's heading to, and that's what it's always been heading to. Israel doesn't matter. It was set up to fail. It was set up for us to waste our energy screaming at it. It's soon not going to be there, because it wasn't ever supposed to be there, because it's irrelevant. It was never created as something to be cared about, as something to last. It was simply created as a mechanism. It's simply part of the theatre. All of these wars that don't matter, it's theatre to keep us screaming about the destruction, screaming about the loss of human life. We can sit there and scream for Palestine all we want. It will never be healed, because it wasn't created to be healed. It was created to be perpetuated, to keep us there screaming about a situation we cannot fix, because by doing so, we're not paying attention to the technology that is being rolled out under the carpet all around us while we're busy distracted and frustrated and screaming about the loss of human life and the human suffering we see all around us. Now, you want to heal the situation in Palestine, in Syria, the situation in Yemen? Stop supporting your government, never join the military, and never allow anybody you know to join the military. And if you work for a company that supports the military or makes devices or parts for the military, then quit. And if your partner works for such a company or works for the military or works for the police or works for the government, tell your partner to quit their job or get another partner. That's something that will make a difference. It won't make a difference just sitting there waving your fist at the air and screaming that the world is corrupt. It won't make a difference waiting for QAnon to come and save the day. If you don't want the system to control your lives, to keep destroying the world, then stop supporting the system in every aspect and every form that it takes. Now, all the issues that we're given to preoccupy ourselves with, the women's rights, Black Lives Matter, social justice warriors, whatever it is that's putting you against whatever other group in society thinks differently to you, all of this stuff, we do, which we think makes a difference. It doesn't make any difference at all. It's all a distraction, and it's all a distraction from the smart grid. So how do we deal with the smart grid? Like I said, the problem is that most people don't see it because they're too preoccupied with all of these other issues. And in trying to deal with all of these issues, but then even in dealing with them, we go about it all completely the wrong way. We all go down the paths that are put there and provided for us to go down, all of which lead nowhere, which is exactly why they're put there. And we just don't ever step back and look at things realistically, because we don't ever look at it from a human perspective and see the value of ourselves and realize that what we're dealing with here is just other people. We're trying to address it by screaming at it. We're not looking at where it comes from. It all comes from our governments, and it's all being done for a reason, just to keep us distracted so that this whole digital dystopia can come online. And that's what it's always been about, folks, because that is the New World Order. Now, about a year ago, a year and a half ago, I put out a show called Giving Life to Lucifer. And it wasn't a religious show, but it was about the surveillance state and how it's growing and what this technology is doing. I do urge people to go and have a listen to that show and to pay attention to their surroundings. And in looking at this situation, focus on what they can deal with and the changes they can make in their own lives and in their own community and get involved on the ground that way where you live, because that's going to make much more difference than screaming out about international issues or waiting for Trump to come and save the day. And I'll tell you right now, Trump and QAnon, none of this is addressing this surveillance state. None of it is addressing the smart grid. None of it is addressing 5G. None of it is addressing anything of any substance at all. It still just amazes me how people believe the state is ever going to save them from the state. And if all these mass arrests are really going to happen, if the Clinton Foundation is really going down, I think it's quite interesting that the Clintons have just booked a massive speaking tour. So they don't seem to be too concerned about being arrested, and neither does anybody else. It will be interesting to see what happens next month in November anyway. At least if worse comes to worse, at least people may perhaps stop drinking the QAnon Kool-Aid and thinking that Trump is coming to save them. Perhaps people will begin to realize the depths of the lie that we are actually facing in the world today. Now, really, when you take everything into account, folks, some of the recent shows that I've done on the fact that our history has been changed, these are massive issues. And you don't see any of this being talked about by the state. You don't see any of these realities being addressed by QAnon. And there's always this preparation to tell the truth. It's the same as when they were claiming disclosure was going to happen a few years ago. Remember that? Although it has happened so many times, you might ask which version of disclosure I'm referring to. I mean, they have been saying it since about 1979, that we are about to find out about UFOs, we're about to have alien disclosure happen, and all this sort of stuff that they lead people down these rabbit holes. They've been saying this for years, and people are still waiting for it. But there's always the discussion of their need to prepare for disclosure and their need to prepare to tell the truth. It's the same as this whole QAnon Trump thing. They need to prepare because it's going to shock the public so much. So all the indictments need to be sealed. And there's been these sealed indictments sitting there for months. And we need to prepare to do the right thing. We can't just do the right thing. We need to prepare to do the right thing for months and months and months on end. And why is there always this massive preparation period is the point that I'm trying to make. Yeah, you don't need to prepare to tell the truth to someone, ladies and gentlemen. You simply tell the truth. It's kind of quite easy to do. You just open your mouth and you let the words come out. You don't need to put this entire infrastructure in place to prepare to tell the truth. You just stop telling lies. It's pretty simple. Why does anyone ever do that? Why do we always need these big preparation periods? You don't think you might be just being told to sit back and eat popcorn for 8 months and let us roll the surveillance state out a little bit more? Because really, when you look at it, I mean, that seems to be what's happening, folks. So perhaps when Hillary Clinton isn't in jail by the end of November, and perhaps when things don't change and the world doesn't turn into the utopia that the Q supporters are expecting, perhaps when all this doesn't happen in November, perhaps people will lift their heads up from their rabbit holes and begin to pay attention to what is happening around them. But then, like I said, maybe they will stage mass arrest just to appease everybody, because it would be a very smart thing to do. You know, when you think of the concept of the externalization of the hierarchy, there are so many people now, at least over 50% of American people don't trust their government anymore. So with that sort of a situation, you've got to do something to restore people's faith in government. And the best thing to do, really, would be to stage a whole bunch of mass arrests and hang a whole bunch of people out to dry. Whether they even go to jail or not doesn't matter. After the media show, you can just play it any way you want. You can put it in the newspapers and on the TV that, yes, these people have all gone to jail. You could even say that they've been executed, whatever. The people will believe it because the media said so. And that will restore people's faith in government, and you'll get yourself at least another 10 years of free sailing from that point, because people will think, well, the deep state has just been removed. Now we're back to our beautiful, pristine, wonderful, trustworthy, super honest state, which would never ever hurt us, because in the history of states, when has the state ever hurt anybody? It's always been the deep state. That's the mentality that people will adopt. And they will simply allow the smart grid to roll out because they'll think it's all been done for their benefit because all the bad people have been removed. There can't be any more human trafficking happening anymore because we saw all of these people arrested from all these sealed indictments. So all these wars that we're fighting now must be real wars for real reasons, and we should all trust the plan. And really, folks, when you've got this many people in the world who really do not trust their governments at all, it becomes necessary to stage something like the QAnon operation and perhaps even, as I said, follow through with some mass arrests just to provide the theatre needed to give the system some stability again and restore people's faith in government and allow the smart grid to be rolled out to completion. All the world is a stage, ladies and gentlemen, and people really should not forget that fact when looking at how all these things are played. Now, there's nothing that happens on the world stage that isn't planned to happen the way it happens. And if it goes a little bit awry and the plan doesn't go completely the way they thought it would, well, there's always a backup plan in place. Plan B, Plan C, Plan D, Plan E. I mean, they've got a lot of them. They can always find a way out of whatever mess they create. And most people will believe it anyway, no matter how preposterous it is, because they'll simply go whichever way the media directs them to go. I mean, the mainstream really has got beyond a bad joke. It used to be B-grade news. It's gone beyond C-grade news. Some of the fake news we see from CNN, all of the reports you hear out of the war zones, everything they tell you is the reverse of what is actually happening. And the media have got it down to a fine art. They can do it without batting an eye now. And people seem to generally just swallow it and believe it because they saw it on the TV, so they consider that it must be true. Even though there's been so many instances where CNN, Fox, and all of the main players have been caught faking news, people still believe it, and people still follow whatever the general consensus says. And once social crediting comes in, and people are starting to get trust scores for the way they think and behave, well, it's going to get even worse. But I think we have reached break time here, folks, so I'll leave it there for now. We're going to have a break. Thank you for joining me on the show today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, so considering the opening quote of the true power of a lie being measured by the amount of people will then go out and attempt to convince others of its truth, this really describes our entire society to a T, and most especially when you look at the education system, this is really the basis of our entire education system, which again is not designed to educate, it's designed to control the narrative. It's designed to control what people think about the world, what people think the world is, and what people think they are themselves, what they think their place in society is. It's designed to replace any personal experience or any personal observations of the world with a foregone opinion, which was created by somebody else who was not you. And in doing so, it's designed to remove people of their own personal power, remove people of any true value they have in themselves, to shift that value so it's not actually about themselves, it's more about what they look like or how many hits they get on Instagram or how popular they are, how many likes they get on Facebook. And to homogenize society and to make everybody the same, turn everybody into a nice, obedient little drone. And it's all extremely compartmentalized as well, whereby you go to school and you pick your particular field of study and you just study that. So you don't learn any real life skills. You only learn about one thing, and you learn about it in such a way that it takes you years to learn what you could learn in weeks, and you don't actually develop any real hands-on skill in the process until you leave school and you get out there in the so-called workforce. But it's all designed to compartmentalize people, to compartmentalize thinking. You know, none of it is real education, none of it. And so much of it is a distraction. You know, you think about all the things that we go to university to study. If you were to just get out in the world and do those things, you'd learn so much more about them so much quicker, and you would be so much more adept at understanding them and knowing what this skill and craft really was, because you'd participated in your life, and while you were doing it, you were learning other things along the way. I mean, it's a far better form of education, folks, and it's called the world, reality, life. You can just get out there and do it, and you learn all sorts of incredible stuff simply by throwing yourself to the wind and seeing where you end up. But you don't get any of that from the education system. I mean, that's how I got all of my life skills. I didn't even finish high school. And I can do so many different things because I've gone out there in the world and done them. And that's what real education is, folks. It's living your life. And all of the education that we're given and told is actual education is not. It's indoctrination and it's distraction from your life and from learning the life skills you would like to have. Now, you don't learn how to build a house by going to school to learn how to build a house. You learn how to build a house by going and building a house. I mean, sure, it might be good to get a few pointers along the way, have someone to help you, but I guarantee that you'll learn more building a single house with someone who knows how to build a house than you will ever learn from going and doing 10 years of study on how to build one. You know, people are often just too scared to take life head on and to jump in at the deep end. So the old story of the man who really wanted to swim, but he was too scared to jump in the water without first taking swimming lessons. You know, people have been taught that they have no real worth, and so they have no real concept of what they're capable of, and so they're scared to think outside of the box, and they're scared to really jump in and take the plunge and have that confidence in themselves that they should have. They don't have it because they compare themselves to everybody else. They compare themselves to whatever the social system has put there for them to compare themselves to, which is really a completely unrealistic comparison. And all of it has been designed to promote a sense and a feeling of inadequacy in people. This loss of personal value, this loss of self, which is why all the shows that I've done in the last 10 years have all been pointed towards that. The rediscovery of the self, you know, the fact that people just live their lives perpetuating the lie that has been fed to them by other people without really experiencing life for themselves. You know, that's the cause of the whole problem that we face here, is this loss of self, this loss of personal value. And what that leads to, you know, as I've said, when you take so much away from people, you squash their consciousness into a box and you fracture it and you only allow them to think in a certain way. You remove all value from them and you keep them in scarcity. Then they compete with each other, they attack each other, they judge each other. They begin to perceive authority as being something that is real, and paying to be alive seems all perfectly normal. And hierarchies get established, and social order gets established, and they're far more easy to control because they have become divided amongst themselves. Divide and conquer is the motto, and it works on so many levels that people don't notice the subtleties of the operation. How the simple social structure, the simple system of scarcity and economics is designed to keep people divided, right at the most basic level. And even the way our family units have been constructed, it's designed to keep people divided, to keep families separated, and even to keep siblings within the families separated from each other, and to keep the children separated from their parents. The whole thing has been constructed this way. And even the so-called resistance has been constructed this way through the application of belief systems. You know, people finding parts of the rabbit hole and thinking, wow, this is, and locking themselves into that and arguing with everybody else, when really, nobody really knows what's going on at all. And oh my Lord, do you get in trouble when you say that nobody knows what's going on. We've all been given these rabbit holes to go down to keep us distracted and to keep us fighting with each other over our different belief systems. And when you really step back and look at it and you see just how divided we are, it does get to be a little frustrating. You do sometimes lose a little hope, but a lot of people are seeing it now, I think. I mean, there's so many people that are researching so many different avenues now, and so many people have picked up on the fact that our history is completely wrong, that we've been lied to on all counts. And so I'm seeing a lot more people agreeing to disagree and not allowing their belief systems to get in the way. There are still a lot of polarized people who will claim that anything you do that doesn't agree with them is shilling for somebody else. People really do take that to the extreme as well. Even when you talk about cryptocurrencies, you can look at cryptocurrencies, you could argue the pros and cons of cryptocurrencies. But someone who is completely against cryptocurrencies will say that even doing that is shilling for the cryptocurrencies, because if you're not condemning it to hell with all fibers of your being, then you are shilling for it. Same with Israel. If you speak out against Israel, you speak out against the Jews, but you don't condemn them all completely and say it's all this big satanic Luciferian thing, then you're shilling for Israel. This is the way they do it, folks. Extremist polarized thinking, and all this has been injected into the movement just to keep the movement divided. And there are some people who still think that way, but I'm seeing a lot of those types of mindsets being put down by people. I'm actually seeing flat earthers and globe earthers starting to converse with each other now, which is really good. Really great to see. I've got a lot of flat earthers that are patronizing my channel now and coming and listening to the radio shows, quite happy to not force me into their belief system, which has been really good to see as well. So there are certain sections of the resistance which are seeing the need to put all of this stuff down with each other and the need to unite. A lot of people are seeing the power that unity could bring, which I think is another reason why the government is ramping things up so much, why they brought QAnon out and all of this theater. See, this is another thing about the QAnon operation, is it polarizes the resistance because it puts the left against the right, people who support Q, people who don't support Q, and of course they won't sit there and just be amicable. Either you're with us or you're against us. It's that mentality. Again, polarization, divide and conquer, all part of the same play. That's the way they do it, folks. That's why they ramp all these things out, because people are seeing the unity is the answer, so they have to inject as much division as they can. All these bits of theater, all these wars, all this posturing with Russia, all the stuff going on with the UN. Australia is thinking of leaving the UN now, saying we should pull out of the United Nations agreement, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because if the United Nations was a functional body, it could be of some benefit. Of course, it isn't a very functional body at the moment. It's part of the control grid. But Australia having no Bill of Rights and having virtually all freedoms being removed from the people, for the people of Australia, being able to possibly cling on to some vestige of international law may be some form of salvation for those who think the legal system is real. So you've got to look at the pros and cons of this. As I said, the UN is a completely dysfunctional organization, but if Australia is saying they want to pull out of it, you've got to look at it and think, well, what is the deeper play? Because I sincerely doubt the government is actually doing anything that would actually benefit the people. That simply would not be true to the character of the Australian government. So whatever the motivation is, it certainly is going to usher in deeper play, whatever that is. But as I said, I think things are possibly going to come to a head pretty soon. We may even see something reasonably major happen before the end of this year. It wouldn't surprise me one little bit. Of course, you never know with these people. They do like to keep you on the edge and keep you hanging on your seat, expecting some major disaster to be right around the corner. And that's all part of the play as well. But through all of it, of course, the question is what to do about it, what to do about our situation. You know, that's what people are always asking me when they listen to the radio shows and people write to me and say, well, you're bringing us the problems, but what is the solution? Well, again, folks, it comes back to a loss of self. You know, knowing the power that you have gives you the ability to stand up to people who claim a right of ownership over you or a right of authority over you. You know, laughing at these people and questioning their actions makes a huge difference, especially when you do it in a public arena. If you go to council meetings and you laugh at the council members and you ask them questions in the most brutally honest fashion you can find, you really do make a difference. You cause that penny to drop in people's minds. You just crack that shell with them. Even if you don't have any success in getting any change happen at the meeting, even if you get thrown out of the meeting, even if you embarrass yourself, it doesn't matter. You still wake other people up during the process. And these are the things that count. You know, it's people's willingness to comply with a system that is essentially fiction that is the whole problem. That's the only way we're going to get out of this mess, is to realize that we're dealing with a fiction. You know, the problem is that people just don't have the time to step back and look at it. This is why the whole concept of Trump coming along to save the world is so completely ludicrous. We don't need Trump to save the world. We can save the world now by simply not complying with our own slavery. It's this mistaken belief in authority and this concept that we have that we must think in a certain way and we must obey all these rules, which are completely meaningless and very often cause us to go against our moral compass by obeying these rules. You know, it's our willingness to do this, our willingness to step outside our moral compass to comply with someone else's regulations on how we should live our own lives, and our unwillingness to help people around us when we see people in hardship. We judge them by their economic worth, by their economic standing. You know, and we're seeing more of these people disappearing, folks. More and more homeless people are disappearing. You've got to ask the question, what's happening to them? Where are they going? Where are they disappearing to? You know, watch how the lower rungs of society are discarded. They become homeless, and then once they become homeless, they disappear from the streets. The question is, where are they going? Look at the organ sales and the organ harvesting that's still going on from war zones. None of these things are changing. DynCorp is still running things in the war zone. The White Helmets are still in there doing their thing as well. And the White Helmets are not doing what people think, folks. The White Helmets are not in there to protect children. The White Helmets are in there smuggling weapons into ISIS and smuggling children out for DynCorp. And as I pointed out on previous shows, children are the first resource harvested from war zones, and the amount of illegal organ harvesting that goes on in these places is absolutely through the roof. And this is mainly what these terrorist cells are all about. And all of these terrorist cells are working for the West. The whole war of terror has been a manufactured event right from the very beginning. There was a Syrian man arrested and sentenced to 11 years in jail by Israel just the other day. His crime, he was photographing the Israeli army rescuing wounded terrorists from Syria and giving them free medical treatment in Israel. He was sentenced to 11 years in prison for filming that. Because the ISIS terrorists are all being run by Israel. ISIS is not an Islamic force. ISIS is a mercenary army being run by Israel and being given weapon support and logistic support by the West, most especially the United States, who's been doing weapons drops in there right since the conflict began. Not to mention supplying Saudi Arabia with weapons so they can continue the absolutely horrific genocide that has been waged in Yemen. And none of this is being addressed by Western governments. None of this is being addressed by Q. And if there was major arrests in the United States and the deep state was suddenly pulled down, none of this will change any of what is happening in the Middle East. None of it will change what the war of terror is really about. None of it will change the fact that the whole thing was staged by a false flag attack on September the 11th, 2001 on the World Trade Center, which all evidence would indicate was carried out by the rogue state of Israel. None of it will change the destruction of the peoples of Europe via mass migration that is happening there at the moment, which is all being done according to the Kalergi plan. None of this is being addressed by this so-called draining of the swamp and bringing down of the deep state that the Q operation is outlining. None of it is changing any of it, ladies and gentlemen. It certainly isn't affecting the rollout of the police state here in Australia, and no matter what happens in the United States, I do not think it's going to have one single shred of effect on the bigger picture of the world at large. That's the problem, is the Americentric thinking that goes with the Q operation. Because the reality is that the United States of America is not the world. And sure, look, having said that, if something was to happen such as the United States lose its position as the world reserve currency, sure, that's going to affect the rest of the world in a pretty major way. But that's all going to be in line with the new Chinese One Belt, One Road system anyway. And it's all going to move over to digital, and in that digital system, it's not going to matter where the world currency is based, because it'll all probably be some form of cryptocurrency anyway, which is why it's probably a good idea for people to be using private cryptocurrencies now. And again, people say, oh, there's Max shilling for the cryptocurrencies, because they don't understand what the system is doing and where it's going. And most of the people that are saying that, I can guarantee, are out there shopping with credit cards now. So they're using digital currency now, whether they want to admit it or not. but they're using a digital currency, which is a fiat digital currency controlled by the bank, when they could be using a cryptocurrency, which is a private cryptocurrency, which would pull all control from the banks right now while the system is still in place, and it would undermine the system and cause the system to completely fall apart. But if they don't use the cryptocurrencies now and they just allow themselves to be let into this digital control grid, then they're not going to notice the change and they're not going to have taken one of the steps that they could have taken when they had the opportunity to take it. You know, digital currency is a bad thing in all of its aspects. Absolutely it is. But in the system that we've got at the moment where people are using digital currency now, whether they want to admit it or not, using private cryptocurrencies is certainly far better than using a fiat digital currency. I've explained this on other shows. I mean, if the government chooses to go blockchain and go crypto itself, then it's going to do it anyway. But if we were to all go crypto right now, go private crypto right now, we would pull all the funding from the system and the government wouldn't be able to function from that point. Just that people can't see that. Again, it's the polarized thinking that many people have adopted. Many people simply can't see the forest for the trees. They can't see that many of the tools that are used against us can also be used to, in our favor if we choose to use them in the right way. And again, you know, the whole system is fiction anyway, folks. But people get too polarized in it. They think, well, if the whole system is fiction, then we shouldn't be using any part of it at all. And that's great. I agree we shouldn't. But like I said, we are. People who say that still have driver's licenses, they still drive around in cars, they still shop with credit cards, they still use smartphones, and yet they say they don't want to be part of the system. But they are part of the system, but they're not using those aspects that exist within the system, which could actually wrest control of the system from those who control it now and put that control into the hands of the people. You know, if we want to have this digital reality, if we want to have the internet, we want to have all this mass communication and all this blockchain and all this stuff that we've got now, I mean, a lot of people may be living in fear of the smart grid, but at the same time, they do not want to lose the internet. They're addicted to the internet. They love this instant communication. They love everything the internet has brought to the world. So while they're in fear of it, they also don't want to lose it. So why not use some of the aspects of it and wrest control out of the hands of the government and turn it back into a private enterprise and a free open source enterprise the way it started off to be, or the way it looked when it first started anyway. And we can do this, folks. Again, it all comes down to a loss of self. Why don't we think we have the confidence to do this? Why don't we feel that we just can do this? Why do we feel we have to obey whatever rules anybody writes down when these people are our employees anyway? I mean, we've really got to rediscover who and what we are, ladies and gentlemen, and realize what tools we have available to us and realize the power of just having the confidence to be you can bring to your life. Do you remember when you were a child? Do you remember what it was like to be 3, 4, 5 years old? Do you remember how wondrous the world was? And how confident you felt in yourself. How amazing everything was. But you felt like Superman, like Superwoman. You felt like you could do anything. You felt special. You felt like you were here for a reason, for a purpose. You felt strong. You felt powerful. You felt like you could do anything. The world was right there and you were going to discover it and do everything you ever wanted to do. That's how I felt when I was a child. And I think most children do. Most children feel incredibly confident in themselves and incredibly secure in themselves until they go to school, until they get taught that they're not what they thought they were. They're not special. They're not good. They're not brilliant. They're not someone who knows what they are. They need to be taught what they are. They need to be taught to think in a certain way. They need to pass the tests. They need to be subject to examination. They need to live up to the whims of their peers. They need to be everything they can be trained to be, but not to be themselves. And that's what school does to people. That's what the education system does to people, because that's what it is designed to do to people. But if you can get back to that part of yourself that had that confidence, the confidence that you knew was there when you were born, the confidence you had when you were a child, if you can get back to that, it's really an amazing thing. I guess that's one of the things with me, folks. I don't feel like I ever grew up. I guess I'm a bit like Peter Pan in that way. My body's getting more and more decrepit, but my mind is just the same as what it was when I was a kid. I know a lot more than what I did then. Well, I like to think that I know a lot more than what I did then. I've got a lot more experience than what I did then. But I still have that same confidence in myself. I still have that same wondrous outlook for the world. I find everything amazing. I find every day to be amazing. I find every person I meet to be amazing. Sometimes I'm a little tired these days, but I still find the whole thing to be amazing. And one of the most important things about being a child is that when you're a child, when you're 3 or 4 or 5 years old, what you do with your day is what you choose to do with your day. And I guess in one way that's how I've never grown up, because everything I do is what I choose to do with my day. Every part of my life that I've lived, I've done what I chose to do. You know, when I left school because I chose to leave school, because I wasn't learning at school. I chose to argue with my teachers because they weren't teaching me properly. When it was time to leave, I just walked out and left because I chose to be a musician instead. When I stopped being a musician, it's because I chose to do so. I chose to build film sets for a while. And when I stopped doing that, it's because I chose to start playing guitar again. And when I stopped doing that, it's because I chose to be an activist. And everywhere that I travel around the world and all the things that I do, it's all stuff that I do because it's what I choose to do with my life. And many people may look at that and think, well, you've had some kind of charmed life, because they don't really perceive themselves to really have these choices, but I would suggest that they do. You know, everybody does have a choice of what they wish to do with their life. Sure, you might be in a position where you're married, you've got people dependent upon you or whatever, but still, you have a choice. People always have a choice of what to do and a choice of what direction they want to go, what they want to support. And really, it's a choice of, do you believe in yourself or do you not believe in yourself? Perhaps that has really been the only choice I've really had to make, is that I've always believed in myself. I've always known that I can make it through the world by being who I am. I don't need to please anybody. I don't need to be what anybody else wants me to be. All I need to do is to be true to myself and to follow my own heart. And if I'm in my heart and I'm true to my heart and I'm true to other people, then the world will lead me where I'm supposed to go. I've always had that confidence in myself, and so I've always just allowed the world to do that. I have a saying that if you throw yourself to the wind, you can ride it. And really, I'm living proof that it works. And if everyone was to do that, if people were to really make that choice in themselves to always be in their heart in what they do and to be true to themselves, then I don't think the world would be anywhere near in the mess that it's in today. You know, through all the solutions that we're looking for, as I've said so many times, the solution lies within the hearts of every man, woman, and child on this earth. That's the only place the remedy can come from, because that's where all the power lies. The power lies with the people. It lies in whether we choose to comply with our own slavery or whether we choose to be ourselves and be what we want to be. Well, we're getting very close to that time again, ladies and gentlemen, where it is the end of the show. A little bit of a scattered show for you today, but you get that. I will attempt to get a little bit of focus and bring you some more on ancient history over the next week or two. I'd like to get some more focus back on that, because I think it is important for us to understand the past and how much we've been lied to in regard to our past. I think it is very, very empowering for people to comprehend the depths of that and the concept that there may have been a peaceful civilization that existed right across this world. And there is an awful lot of evidence to support this, ladies and gentlemen. As I've mentioned on previous shows, it is a very, very confrontational thing for people to face, which I am finding quite strange. People are very horrified at the concept that we once lived in peace. Very, very strange thing, but that seems to be the mindset of many people, again, due to the programming that they've had, but that's what I'd like to return a little bit of focus to over the next couple of shows anyway. But thank you to all those who do continue to listen to the shows. Thank you for the many kind emails that you send me. Thank you, thank you, thank you to the supporters of my Patreon page. And again, I will be speaking at Anacapulco in February. You'll find a banner to that on my website. And if you click that banner and use the coupon Crowhouse, you'll find you'll get yourself a discount on that ticket. There's going to be 3,000 people at Anacapulco next year, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a huge event. I do recommend you get a ticket now while you can. They are selling pretty quickly. And see if you can get along to that, and I'll look forward to seeing you there if you can make it. I'll be doing one talk and possibly another small talk and possibly one or two workshops as well, so we'll just see how we go. But I'll be in the area for 6 days or a week, so it'll be plenty of time to catch up and plenty of activities to be involved in. So do make sure you come and say hi if you're there. But as if for me, folks, we're now completely out of time. I'll have to leave it there for now. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In La Cache.